The Force Field is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
From Charlotte, North Carolina, for IT service providers, it's The Force Field with Rick Savoia. And now, here is your host, Rick Savoia.
Greetings, providers. Welcome to the unofficial podcast for IT service providers, The Force Field. I'm your host, Rick Savoia, and during the next half hour, we'll cover the news, views, reviews, and interviews for and about the IT industry and the Force Field community. Our call-in segment is open to all listeners Saturday nights from 10:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern. Call 407-278-5698. That's 407-278-5698. Or you can call in via Skype at Savoia Computer if you'd like to be part of the show. Starting and running a computer business is not a cakewalk. I should know. Everything I know about the business, I learned the hard way. I had no mentor, Google was barely in existence, and there was no definitive manual or book about operating a business that specifically focused on the IT industry. I just learned as I went along. It turned out to be a very expensive and frustrating education. Looking back, I realize I'm not alone. Most techs who have that entrepreneurial itch to be their own boss learn the same way I did, by trial and error. Some of them make it. Many of them don't. Even if they hold their own, it is often a tentative grip, based on their abilities, expertise, and the state of the market at that moment. It is feast or famine, and many small IT companies don't know how to cope with the transition from one to the other, which happens often in this business. It is not necessarily lack of technical expertise which leads to the eventual demise of their business, although there are a few who go into business without proper technical training. It is often the lack of business experience, marketing savvy, and overall preparation that does the business in. Sure, you can be the best technician out there, but knowing how to build and repair computers doesn't necessarily equate to running a successful computer business. Without business experience and a solid business model to build on, chances are it is only a matter of time and money before your business goes bust. There are many reasons why the tech is not usually prepared for the management side of the business, but one strike against the small computer businessman or woman is the lack of adequate resources for learning to become one. This industry is still in its infancy, and there has not been a lot out there on the topic of owning and operating a computer business. Until now. This week, we are going to talk to a provider who learned the computer business on his own, became successful with it, and published his experiences in a new book written specifically for computer techs and IT service providers to help them get through the trials and tribulations and possibly even find the profit and success in owning a small business in computer repair. But first, let's take a look at what's going on elsewhere in the IT industry. Hitachi has announced a breakthrough in read head technology for hard drives, reducing the size of the heads to between 30 to 50 nanometers, or about 2,000 times smaller than a human hair, by using what it calls current perpendicular to the plane giant magnetoresistive heads. The company can quadruple current hard drive capacity up to 4 terabytes for desktop drives and 1 terabyte for notebook hard drives. According to a press release, the company plans to incorporate this new technology in its products by 2009. Skype released version 3.6 of its popular internet phone software November 15th, allowing users to send and receive high-quality video calls. The company recently partnered with Logitech to set benchmarks for the delivery of high-quality video to consumers with a resolution of 640 by 480 at 30 frames per second. In a press release, Gareth O'Loughlin, Skype's general manager, mobile and hardware devices, said, "Our recent announcement made many people realize that sharp, smooth, and lifelike video calls on the Internet should be available to everyone, not just big companies with expensive video conferencing equipment." According to the press release, users will be able to send and receive video that is clear, sharp, and smooth, even in full screen mode. You can download Skype at www.theforcefield.net. The link is located on the right sidebar of the podcast episodes page. Microsoft has confirmed a bug in the random number generator used in Windows XP. Israeli researchers recently discovered the bug, which can be used to compromise encryption in Windows. Initially, Microsoft Security Response Communication Manager Bill Sisk claimed there was no security vulnerability. However, the company later acknowledged the bug and confirmed that Windows 2000 and Windows XP are vulnerable to attack. There are no plans to patch the vulnerability in Windows 2000. Microsoft plans to issue a fix for Windows XP in Service Pack 3. According to Microsoft, Service Pack 3 is due to be released sometime in 2008. We hope. And that's the news in the Force Field.
Still find yourself guessing about a PC's problems? Are you still swapping components? With PC Doctor Service Center 6, you can fix more computers in less time. Service Center 6 is a complete PC diagnostic kit for break-fix repair technicians, system builders, and small-scale manufacturers. Call 1-866-BUY-PCDR today and mention the Force Field podcast to get $49 off. For the last 14 years, PC Doctor has fine-tuned its diagnostics for 4 of the 5 top global PC manufacturers who now ship our diagnostics on 20 million PCs a year. From that experience, we have developed Service Center 6, an industry-leading professional offering with all the hardware and software necessary to fix a Windows or non-Windows PC. With Service Center 6, you will see an improvement in your business. Try us today with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Call 1-866-BUY-PCDR today, and until January 31st, 2008, mention the Force Field podcast to take an extra $49 off.
You're listening to The Force Field, and this is the part of the show I look forward to the most, as it is the opportunity to talk to my fellow providers. Whether you are currently in the computer business or just thinking about starting one, you want to make the most of every resource available to increase the chances of its profit and success. One resource which could prove to be a great asset to computer repair businesses is a new book written by entrepreneur Daniel Hand. The book is called Computer Repair Business: Lessons Learned by Daniel Hand, How to Start and Run Your Own Business. A comprehensive strategy by an experienced pro. It is currently available on his website at www.computerrepairbusiness.net and on our website at www.theforcefield.net. This week, we're going to talk to Dan, find out how he became successful in the computer business, and how the lessons he learned can benefit our businesses, if we only apply them. We'll hear his views on building a small business in the computer field, as we learn the ins and outs of The Computer Repair Business by Dan Hand. Dan, welcome to The Force Field.
How you doing, Rick?
First of all, tell us a little bit about yourself and your business.
Well, I retired from the Marine Corps in 2001 and decided about 2002, 2003 to start up my own business. So to start off with, we were just doing web design work, and then we started doing some computer repair work, and after that, it just turned into a full-blown business.
How long did it take between the time that you started and where you are now?
Probably about total 4 years to get it to the full-blown thing that it's going at now.
In your book, you mentioned that the very first year you had been quite successful.
Yeah, the first year. Every year so far, we've made over $100,000, and mainly most of that is because of the business work we get.
Your book gives an interesting take on starting a computer business based on your own experiences gained through trial and error. And I think a lot of us can relate to that because, for the most part, we really didn't have a manual specifically for running a business. What specifically inspired you to write the book?
A lot of it was just like you say, when you start off, you don't really know what to do. And I know when we started, it was just me and the wife, and the first marketing thing I did was the Yellow Book, and we sat there wondering, it was $106 a month, if that was even going to benefit us, because no one we knew, there was no one to ask that was actually in this field that could give us a good answer. So between that and reading forums, and it didn't seem like many people wanted to give legitimate answers, besides the fact saying to do their research, do this, do that, but no one wanted to give anyone the right, what I thought, the tools they needed to be successful.
Why do you think that was? You think it was mainly because they were trying to protect their own proprietary interests, or they just maybe really didn't know themselves? They were just sort of struggling through the process like you were.
Well, I think it's a 50-50 on that one. I think a lot of them may have talked pretty much a good game where they said they had a decent business going, but in actuality, maybe they didn't, but they wanted to sound that way. And other people just, I don't think people like sharing this information because they do look at it as everyone's a competitor.
You touch on everything in this book, from obtaining a business license to buying into a franchise. But what I did notice is that you go into detail on topics that a lot of entrepreneurs often overlook when they set up their business, such as following through on commitments to their customers and customer service. Now, I find that somewhat refreshing. Do you consider that a part of the actual mechanics of starting a business?
Yeah, I actually do. I think everything you need, I base it back on, I remember a leadership class I had on bringing a toolbox when you go to work. And I think the same thing as starting a business. You have to have everything from the commitment, customer service, to your reseller accounts, to your hardware, to your inventory. I think everything together is part of the mechanics, because if you don't have something, it's not going to run as smoothly as it should.
That was a great point. Great point. Speaking of customer service, in that chapter, you said, and I'm quoting now, "Treat each and every customer like someone that you are adding to your business for a lifetime." Now, this seems like common sense to anyone trying to build a customer base for their business, but something that I've noticed that it isn't practiced very much by a lot of companies. Now, why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, it could be a lot of things. It could be they're busy. I would have to chalk it up to myself. It would be greed or overconfidence. I mean, when I started off going to businesses or residential places and looking at computers, and some companies would use stickers on their computer after they repaired it. And I thought to myself, why did this customer call me if they already had someone? And the only thing I could chalk it up to is the first impression they got from that company wasn't good enough to keep that customer forever, and I didn't want that happening with my business.
I've seen that happen as well.
Right.
Now, you have some definite views on competition, and in your book, you state that, I'm quoting again, "If you do what you have to do in order for your business to grow, then you will not be concerned with your competition." Now, most computer businesses that I know of are very concerned about competition. As the owner of a computer repair business myself, I find that that's an interesting statement to make. Can you elaborate on it?
Yeah, what I mean by that is you need to be 100% concerned with your own business, and it goes back to the same philosophy of, you know, some people in their life may be concerned about what other people may think of them or something. I've always been a person that I'm concerned about myself and my family, and that's it. In my business, I have the same philosophy. I'm concerned about doing what I need to do for my business the way I think it should be run to be successful. And if I give 100% of that, I have no concern about any other business in my area, because whatever they do is up to them, and it's not going to overflow onto my business or affect my business in the way I do things. To me, it makes sense that if you're wasting time worrying about other businesses, how they're doing things, it's taken away from what you can do for your own business.
And you know, that is a mistake I made early on when I was setting up my business, because in the beginning, it was sort of a manual for me. going into other businesses and seeing how they operated so I could try to emulate that somewhat. But then when I really got into it, I started to realize that, whoa, this is not Bob's Computer Repair. This is Savoia Computer Repair. I've got to run my business the way I see fit. I can't run it just like him because his business is not the same as mine. It's not my business. And if we're all trying to emulate each other, really, in the end, I don't think any of us are going to come out on top.
No, and there's no way to do it because you're too busy and too consumed with how other people are doing things, and you're losing the focus on what you set out to do.
Mm-hmm. I also noticed in Lesson 9, and I'm going to quote, you said, do sweat the small things. Do sweat the small things. No matter how small, no matter how trivial it might seem, you need to sweat those things. Now, I found that really an interesting statement because that runs counter to the way some companies work in general. You know, some would consider that micromanaging their business.
Right.
Why do you consider it important to worry about the small stuff?
Well, it goes back to starting a business. When you start, you have a philosophy of how you want things done and a vision and the way you want things done. And like myself, I have two full-time employees, and as far as I'm concerned, they're top-notch. But by the same token, I have a vested interest in that business. It's my business. So if I'm not going to sweat the small things, who's going to sweat them? I have to count on those employees sweating it or someone else, and I don't look at it as micromanaging. I mean, an example would be today I had two major installs going. I have one of my employees doing it and another contractor I know doing the other one with 20 years experience. But tonight I called both of those businesses just to let them know that, you know, I'm still part of the process and I have a vested interest. So it's really looking out for my own business as compared to looking out how they do things.
Mm. Well, I can understand that, but as your business grows, you're going to reach a certain point where you can't be right there all the time doing everything with them. Where do you draw that line?
Well, when I say about sweating the small things, I don't mean the day-to-day. I mean, we could do 8 repairs a day in shop or go to 4 customers, and I'm not going to check every computer they worked on in the store or call every single customer, but to me, it's when you get neglect in doing those things at all, that's going to end up biting you in the long run because you didn't put the interest into it. And for example, with today's businesses, I mean, these projects are, you know, thousands of dollars to my business. So to me, making a phone call, one is sweating the small things, but it's also good customer service to do that. And my employees know I do it, and they know that if they're working on something, I don't have to go back and check behind them, but I'm just doing what I need to do for my business.
That makes sense. You cover outsourcing your services to national companies in your book, and you mention several of them in particular, as well as your experience as an outsource. Looking back, do you recommend outsourcing to other companies, to those who are just starting out in the computer repair business?
Yeah, and I think you have to. Some things you need to outsource. Say, for an example, if I know a lot of people have come to me and say, we know you do web design. We don't do it. Can you do it? Well, to me, they're just giving me money that they don't need to do because they have their own business. What they need to do is get a good source for themselves so they can outsource that service. You need to be able to be a full-service business in this line of work. If you just put yourself in the field and all you can do is viruses or spyware or things like that, and you're leaving out an integral part like web design, for businesses, that's a major thing for them. So you need to be able to outsource, you know, your work so you can have someone lined up to do those types of things.
That's true. One of the longest lessons in the book is devoted to marketing, which is, yes, a very important aspect of any business. That by itself, in fact, is a topic for a whole book.
Right.
In this list of marketing ideas that you had in your book, which forms of marketing listed here are the ones you rely on the most or work best for you?
Well, I think the number one for me would be the internet. And that could vary, of course, depending on where people are from. But in the Virginia, D.C. area, I'd venture to say 75% of the people go to work before they even bother to look for someone in this sort of a service industry. So they get to work, they have internet access, and that's when they're going to start looking for someone to help their business or residential work also. So the internet to us has paid major dividends for the whole time we've been in business. But I also think along that same lines is you can't neglect the telephone book advertising, the newspaper. You know, you almost have to find your niche in your community, what people there are going for.
So really, in short, you found that your website really has been the best asset for your marketing toolkit?
Yeah, the website and I've read it in forums and different places people say about Craigslist. I could live off Craigslist. And some people say, oh, I've tried it, it hasn't worked. And the difference is, I think, I don't just try using Craigslist. I devote. Part of my marketing strategy is Craigslist, and it pays off 10 times for the amount of time that I have to put into that. It's just, it's a valuable source out there, and people don't utilize it. And if you try something one time and it doesn't work, it's easy to say, that didn't work. But you didn't really give 100% to it. And that's where I think a lot of people, you know, fail on that type of marketing.
There are risks involved with Craigslist in some areas, both for the customer and the person advertising.
Right.
Some providers are concerned with being associated with that reputation.
Yeah, some people look at Craigslist and Gumtree and Kijiji, the new one out of Canada, and there's always going to be undesirables and the whole adult industry, things like that. But on a business, especially in our service field, I don't actually think it's that saturated with bad things that it wouldn't pay off. I've got two business contracts I've had over 2 years that I got off Craigslist. And every day I can go on there and find big businesses in D.C. that use Craigslist. So I don't think it's that bad, you know, but obviously there are certain areas, but that goes along with anything else you could do too.
Now, what do you think of the idea of using social networking sites for marketing? I know there are some people that have been doing that with some measure of success, and I've been studying some marketing gurus on the internet who are now starting to pay some serious attention to using social networking sites to market various businesses.
Yeah, there's some pretty big ones out there, and if you can get into the right one and get the right mixture of people in your, you know, I equate those things to being a BNI, but on a nationwide level or even a worldwide level. And if you can get in with the right people, then it pays big dividends.
Well, getting back to the book now, you also include sample forms in your book,
right,
such as warranty, service contract, a sales letter, and other documents. Are these merely examples, or can they be used as general templates?
No, they can be used in as regular proposals, contracts, whatever people want to use. Those are legitimate actual ones we've used to get work, and all I've done is take our name off it, and someone else could easily just put their name into it. Obviously, they'd have to look at a few other things to make sure,
yeah,
you know, they have the same general purpose, that, you know, work that we do, but other than that, they're just pretty much they can use them.
Yeah, then they may have to make some modifications depending on state or provincial laws. I think that was a good add-on to the book. Have you found those to be a good asset for you? I mean, the forms really work for you?
Yeah, people love the forms. I get emails all the time from people, how much they appreciate it, how they've looked for months and couldn't find one. And plus, we're always, I mean, that's part of the website people get access to, and we continually update it. It isn't just, when I did the book, I think maybe there was 10 documents, and right now there's probably 25 in that section for people to use. So it's continually updated.
Now, in the book, you bring up the inevitable question, do I work from home or open a brick-and-mortar storefront? It's not a very large chapter on that. You just touch on it briefly. But I wanted to see if you could expand on that a little bit here. If someone is just starting up, and I think you were basing your comments on someone who was just starting up and was just doing it on a shoestring, as most of us have.
Right.
But if someone is just starting up and has a lot of money and specifically wants to open a storefront for computer repair business, based on your own experience and your personal opinion, what would you tell them?
No. I'll make it short. The answer is no. And the reason is, it takes so much more than just money to be able to be successful at it. And about 2 weeks ago, I talked to a friend in Ohio. He opened up about the same time I did, and he just closed his store. He had more money than I did when we started, but the problem was he didn't have the technical experience, and he didn't have business experience. So he jumped into it, good intentions, everything else, but he just started losing money month after month after month because he wasn't technically proficient enough to succeed, and he couldn't find the other people to help him. And never having run a business before, you're going to make mistakes, and mistakes typically cost money. So to just jump into something like that and put money down, it's a big expense.
Well, I have found from my own experience that when you're starting out, unless you already have employees to do all of those things, if you're doing it yourself as a one-man show, you have to be the tech. You have to be the businessman. You have to be the idea generator. You have to be everything. And if you're missing in one of those areas, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's hard to play catch up. And I tell anyone, if they're starting out, there's no reason not to start off in your house or wherever. And then once you build up a good client base or you have contracts, we had a dozen business contracts before we even thought about opening a storefront. But we knew the storefront would generate more business. But you have to already be established, I think, to be successful.
Now, the last lesson of your book is on buying into a franchise.
Right.
And I understand that you bought into one.
Yes.
Can you briefly give us an overview of what was involved in your purchase and how well it worked for you?
Yeah, when I did it, obviously anyone, you can just start a computer business. If you go down and get a license, you're in business. But I went from the aspect of obviously being in the Marine Corps 20 years, the whole camaraderie team, and I thought Geeks on Call vehicle, and I thought, I'm going to look into a franchise. So I put a ton of effort into it, a lot of phone calls, a lot of emails, calling probably a dozen different franchises to see which was the best fit or how it could benefit me as compared to doing it myself. And I ended up with Computer Medics of America, and they didn't have the biggest marketing campaign out of all the other ones. One, they had the lowest cost to join, but it just seemed like more of a family atmosphere. But by the same token, there were 60 franchises, 70 franchises, people I could pick up the phone, get answers, or check things that they're doing. And to me, it just paid mass dividends as compared to being out there on my own, just doing it when I had never run a business before.
If you were going to make the decision to do it all over again, knowing what you know now, would you do it?
The computer business or franchise?
The computer business, the franchise, everything.
The computer business I would do. I wish I could have done it 20 years ago, but I didn't have that opportunity, obviously. The franchise, I go 50-50 on that some days. Being part of a franchise doesn't hurt me one bit. So it can only benefit me. That's the way I look at it. So I'd have to go with the majority on that one. But for a lot of people starting off in this business, I think a franchise is a good thing for them, because it helps them along the way when other people may not be willing to help them.
Well, Dan, I think you've given us a lot of great advice. I just want to thank you for spending some time with us here on the Force Field and discussing the book. And if anyone wants to pick up a copy of Dan's book, you can pick it up at www.computerrepairbusiness.net. Is that correct, Dan?
Yeah, that's correct.
That's right. That's www.computerrepairbusiness.net. And the name of the book is Computer Repair Business, Lessons Learned. And is it available only in ebook form, or is it also available in hardcover?
No, I actually quit doing the ebook, and it's just in paperback now.
So it's just in paperback now.
Right, and we can give a discount, 10%, to anyone who listens.
And we do appreciate Dan. So everybody, run out, grab a copy of Dan's book. I'm sure you won't regret it. Dan, thanks a lot for being on the Force Field this evening.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
And hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay, take it easy.
You too.
All right.
Well, folks, our time is up. I would like to thank everyone for listening, my kids for allowing me to do this without interruptions, and my wife for just putting up with me. If you would like to comment on the program, you can email me at rick@theforcefield.net or visit our website at www.theforcefield.net. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not represent the Force Field, Savoia Computer, or advertisers. All music on the show is original and was written and performed by Brother Rancid and the Brand New Pygmies. Our announcer is Felix DeCat. The show is produced and distributed by Savoia Computer. For the Force Field, I'm Rick Savoia. May the force field be with you.